Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Ben Flanagan of AL.com. Ben Stark of Wonder Mill Films.
Hey, Ben, how you doing?
Good, Ben. Good morning.
Morning. So we're dealing with a story that kind of broke last night, and that is extremely tragic by nature. And basically, we found out that Zack Snyder's 20-year-old daughter, one of, I think, 8 children, committed suicide a few months ago, and that left him in a position of, you know, deciding whether he keeps working or on Justice League, which is set to release in November, or leave the project. And I think from the story that I read on The Hollywood Reporter, he said that he tried to push through, but at the end of the day, he realized that his family needed him more and that it was just a movie. It's a great movie, he says, but it's just a movie. And I just want to say, like, I think I've probably, you know, snarked a lot about Zack Snyder's films and his work as a director. He's never come across to me as anything other than an incredibly nice and sincere guy. I think that the partnership that he has with his wife as a filmmaking team is phenomenal and something that I think a lot of filmmakers envy in a way. And I think that the fact that he has such a big family and the fact that he made this decision, which is very hard, I mean, the whole situation is unspeakable, but obviously our hearts and prayers need to go out to Zack Snyder and his wife, Deborah. And, this is just an unthinkable scenario, just off the bat, right?
Yeah, you said it, unspeakable tragedy. It's the worst possible thing that can happen, and this is a moment where movies don't matter. They really don't. It's about family, and I'm glad he's taking time off to be with his family, and the same goes for his wife, too, because this is just a moment where no matter the size or the scope of a production that you're a part of, it's the right thing to do. I mean, I don't know what I would do if I were in his position, obviously. If I would think that the right thing to do would be to try to deal with it as best I could in the immediate aftermath and then try to push through it and work through it. And maybe that was his therapy. Maybe he saw that. And maybe he and his wife saw that as his therapy, and that is totally understandable. You know, I've known people who have been in similar situations where work is sort of a way out and a way of dealing with tragedy and a way of just coming to, I don't know, coming to grips.
It's normal.
Distracting,
you know,
yourself.
Like, yeah, it's a normalizing thing. And kind of, you can kind of, not necessarily go on autopilot, but you can tune out the awful stuff and get back to, you know, less important things. But go ahead.
It puts things, unfortunately, like tragedies like this will put things in perspective for people. And, you know, on the other side of that coin, there's also, you know, miracles and wonderful things that also put things into perspective and make you think about how much more important, you know, human life and family and actual things are in the real world. Because our friend Craig sent us a video the other night, and this is unrelated, but it puts things in similar perspective, where it was a Russian basketball coach was being questioned at a press conference by a reporter, and the guy says, why didn't this player play in the semifinal game? And the guy's like, his kid was born. And the guy says, yeah, but this is a semifinal game. It's important. The guy's like, you have kids? Like, oh, you don't? Well, the game, this doesn't matter. Like, our stupid game and our profession, our career, the stakes of this sporting moment, it doesn't matter. He's having a baby, and that's like the height of the human experience, you know? So it's things like that. Again, that's the other side of the coin. And when it comes to tragedy, it doesn't matter how big a movie is. You know, it doesn't matter if it's the Justice League. It doesn't matter if it's an indie movie or whatever. This is his children, you know, we're talking about. This is his family, and this is something that he has to deal with. And you know, it's an extremely personal moment for him, and it's unfortunate that it's been made so public, but he and his wife happen to be associated with one of the biggest movies in the world right now. And so everybody's getting a glimpse into his life. But I just hope that everybody, including the people who you know, constantly crack jokes about DC and Zack Snyder specifically, hopefully everybody can just take a step back and respect the family and just, you know, think about, pray if you do that, and just wish him and his family well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's an interesting point, is that that's something he brought up in the story, is that he wanted to keep this private, you know? I mean, he even said something about, you know, there's going to be speculation on the internet, and so he just had to kind of lay it all out, and that's unfortunately the life that his family has to lead. They're a little bit in the spotlight, and that's a shame, because there's a lot of ugly stuff, you know, from the outside that comes with that. So again, hopefully they can have the time and the space that they need to grieve. And so for the purposes of this discussion, we're not really going to go back into that. We the reason we do this show is to, you know, entertain ourselves, and it's a trifle. And so, you know, again, like you said, this kind of brings everything into perspective, and I can get pretty worked up about this kind of stuff, but at the end of the day, it's all silliness, it's all a trifle, and so we should pay due respect to the real things in life that are precious. So anyway, but the basically the fallout of that situation is that Justice League is, I think, almost done. I think it's in the mid to late stages of post-production. Obviously, we've seen trailers, sizzle reels, and all these things. But one of the more fascinating things about everything is that the person that they brought in to finish the movie at the 11th hour, essentially, is Joss Whedon, who, of course, directed The Avengers, which is the other big Hollywood superhero team-up movie. And when you and I were texting about this, you mentioned the word unprecedented. And is that what you meant? Is that a, for better or worse, competing kind of director comes in and finishes another film that is so similar to his own?
Well, it's sort of what I meant. I mean, yeah, like if you just look at it strictly on those terms, for sure, it's unprecedented. I mean, what could you possibly compare to this?
I mean, this,
you know,
is like theoretically, if Michael Bay came in to finish up Deep Impact.
Right, exactly. And,
yeah.
And it's even bigger than that, you know?
Sure,
and,
much bigger.
And so, but in terms of unprecedented, like what I initially meant, because you make a great point there, but what I initially meant is, When can you remember a project of this enormity in the Justice League, which is the biggest movie that DC and Warner Brothers will have made to date, you know, where the high-profile director has had to leave midway or, like, during post-production, like you said, I imagine, because we've seen, like, a couple of trailers. In the latest one, there were lots of what looked like finished special effects and set pieces, so it seems like the bulk of this is finished. And like you said, I mean, it comes out in just less than 6 months, I believe. So there's still clearly a lot to be done. And we've heard about reshoots that have been ordered on this. And clearly that maybe not clearly, but it probably has something to do with obviously what has happened with Snyder and his family and some things that just some loose ends that might need to be tied up without the chief and the person in charge of this whole production. So, but when have you, like, can you recall just a major production like this where, again, a high profile director has had to leave mid production and has, like, that alone is to me kind of like very strange and very rare, but also being replaced by perhaps an equally high profile director like Joss Whedon. Like, the only thing I can really think of off the top of my head, and I might be missing something obvious here, like, I go all the way back to something like Eyes Wide Shut, which is not as big of a movie as Justice League, but Stanley Kubrick obviously shot the movie, but he passed away during, I believe, post-production. I don't believe it was during, like, the waning, like, days of production or anything, but he died, and if I'm not mistaken, didn't Sidney Pollack have to step in and sort of oversee post-production? So, I mean, like, that's similar But again, I think that this is uncharted territory in a way for Hollywood. But remind me if I'm missing something.
Well, I think unfortunately, I think this kind of thing probably happens more often than we realize. I still think it's rare, but I think it happens more often than we realize. It's usually probably more low profile or less binary, I guess. Because, I mean, yes, there's one situation if a filmmaker passed away or has a tragedy or something like that and has to step away. But functionally, the end result, I don't know if this is much different than what we saw last year with Rogue One, where Gareth Edwards was, you know, phased out of production, and then they brought in Tony Gilroy to finish up. Obviously, those aren't the same kind of director, and then those are, you know, they have different strengths and different styles. Whereas these two guys, obviously, they have very different styles, but, you know, it would have been very weird had they brought in J.J. Abrams, you know, to finish up that movie. But that'd be kind of more similar. But no, I feel like in some ways this is going to be treated, you know, procedurally the same way as it would if Zack Snyder had been removed for whatever reasons or, you know, stepped away or for if they had left for creative differences. I'm thinking that, you know, all of his wishes are still going to get carried out here. You know, that Whedon is just the strong hand to kind of, you know, I don't think Whedon is going to take this opportunity to wrestle control over the Justice League, you know, or anything like that.
I would assume he's just going to execute Zack Snyder's.
Exactly. Like, what kind of monster would he be? Yeah, to take advantage to impose his will on this project at this point, you know, for that reason. It'd be different if it had been for creative differences. So I think that is the unprecedented thing, is that, and it's closer to the Eyes Wide Shut approach, where it's like, well, he's carrying out the wishes, or what he thinks the wishes would have been. And then another situation, which is, again, very different, but kind of reminds me, is when in the later stages of Jurassic Park, when Steven Spielberg went off to film Schindler's List and George Lucas took over post-production, kind of day-to-day operations on post-production of Jurassic Park. So like that also may be a comparable, you know, situation.
Yeah, and just in terms of like the identity of Justice League, I think we're still, like we've said here, going to get the Zack Snyder Justice League.
This is going to be a Zack Snyder movie, I think. There's no reason to think it won't be.
Well, because A, we're in post-production, so that means that Snyder, for the most part, has directed this movie. And B, there are going to be reshoots, and I'm reading in the Hollywood Reporter story who have been all over the Zack Snyder news, I believe, who broke the news. They reported that after a screening of the rough cut for fellow filmmakers and friends, Zack Snyder wanted to add additional scenes. And so, you know, call it reshoots or call it additional shoots. So he brought on Joss Whedon to write those additional scenes, and he would direct those. So Joss Whedon has taken over post-production and written the reshoot scenes, but I don't know if that means that he is directing any of the reshoot scenes or if Zack Snyder has already directed those, and this is now strictly in the in the hands of Whedon when it comes to post-production.
Yeah. So from what I understand, they're actually going off and shooting, and Whedon is directing, but maybe I misread that somewhere else.
Yeah, so, I mean, who knows? Like, for people expecting this to be a Joss Whedon movie now, like, I don't know.
No, I have no idea.
And, like, based on what we saw in the trailer so far, it looks very much like a Zack Snyder movie. So I don't know how much of it's going to change. I don't know what kind of split dynamic we're going to see. Maybe, because, I mean, like, even from the jump, at the Comic-Con teaser for this, we saw that Snyder and company were infusing as much humor as they could into this, as opposed
right.
to what they had given us in the first couple of movies that he directed in this universe. So maybe that's Whedon's direct influence, but I don't know that Whedon was involved at that point.
What I'm interested to find out is, and what I suspect was going to happen, I think we're going to, I think the real narrative here is when did Joss Whedon hop aboard DC? And I think that we're going to find out that that happened a lot longer ago than just this round of reshoots. I'm thinking that he quietly probably, you know, just to keep from making waves. I think he's probably been on this project as at least a consultant of some sort for a lot longer than any of us expect. Just, I don't know. I'm not sure what I'm basing that on, but I feel like perhaps in the fallout of Batman v Superman, and the studio kind of got the note that there was a bit of a humor issue, or maybe it was Suicide Squad, and decided to bring in Whedon as a consultant, and then he's just kind of, I mean, he's a comic book guy, so he's probably just fallen more and more in love with these characters again, and gotten more and more involved from a overall DC perspective, because, I mean, there's, I think it's been announced, right, that he's going to be writing and directing a Batgirl movie. It's kind of like the last 3 months or so, it's come out more and more that Joss Whedon has creative sway over this Warner Brothers DC universe, and I don't know, I'm curious to find out when that relationship really started.
Well, that sentence I just read from the Hollywood Reporter story, it raises eyebrows. I mean, it's a little alarming in that, like you said, you wonder, like, when did this relationship really start? When was Whedon brought into the DC fold? Where it says Snyder took it upon himself to bring Whedon on board to write these additional scenes. So it's like, wait a second, like, how long has Whedon been in sort of like the circle of trust when it comes to Zack Snyder?
Right.
Like, we don't really know like how real the Marvel DC rivalry is, but I'm sure that it's kind of real. You know, I mean, they are competitors, and so
yeah, there it is. There's a thing for sure. Yeah,
so you're taking like the man from the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what we haven't really said, but yeah, I think that's the statement, is that Joss Whedon has jumped ship. I mean, this is a pretty big deal. If you paint this with the Monday Night Wars narrative, you know, this is like Kevin Nash and Scott Hall showing up on Nitro. You know, I mean, this is a major player in the Marvel fold, leaving that group in a bit of animosity and showing up on the other side.
To use another analogy, I mean, in a weird way, it'd be kind of, and I hate to, I know that Whedon wouldn't approve of this analogy, but if we're maybe doing the opposite, it's like if Steve Bannon suddenly started working for the Hillary Clinton campaign during the 2016 election. You know, but I mean, it's similar just in terms of like,
yeah, power,
the absolute opposite,
power dynamic.
Working for the absolute opposite, you know, like one of the star players of one team is working for the arch rival nemesis team now, you know, and it's so you have to consider, like, or you have to wonder and unfortunately speculate, like, how large a role Whedon has now with Warner Brothers in DC behind the scenes, like in an unofficial capacity, and we at least have sort of a glimmer of what that is now based on his role and the fact that they're willing to hand over this enormous project to Joss Whedon. But look, he's an old hand at this point. I mean, he's directed and realized two of the biggest movies ever in both of his Avengers movies. So, I mean, if you need somebody, ideally Joss Whedon might be the exact person that you bring in for this. So,
yeah, I mean, he's the only other person that's ever done this. You know, I mean, it's at the end of the day, who have made big, crazy superhero team-up movies? It's Joss Whedon and Zack Snyder, and then I guess arguably the Russo brothers. You know, so I mean, you're not going to get them. So who's next? I mean, Joss Whedon is these. Yeah, it's literally like I don't know. I keep trying to think of other comparisons, but it'd be like if after Star Wars, Roger Corman got George Lucas to direct Battle Beyond the Stars, or some other, you know, similarly structured and themed movie. And it's crazy. And honestly, I mean, it's hard for me not to pick a side here. And obviously it's really silly to pick a side here, but there's part of me that's like a little bit irritated with Joss Whedon about this. Obviously, I mean, it's hard to be mad at the guy now because he's doing such a helpful thing for Zack Snyder and protecting his vision, and that's great. But yeah, I mean, just in general, it's like, I guess that Age of Ultron experience must have really stung for him to do something this dramatic. And again, it's at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter that much, but to these sides, to these parties, to Kevin Feige and to the executives at Warner Brothers and to even the cast of the Avengers, you know, this sends some sort of message. And, that message seems to be that Marvel sucks.
No, well, it probably, look, I mean, the Warner Brothers president, Toby Emmerich, went on record with Hollywood Reporter, or maybe he just made a statement that he released, but he said, in this case, the directing is minimal and it has to adhere to the style and tone and the template that Zach set. He says, we're not introducing any new characters. It's the same characters and some new scenes. He's handing the baton to Joss, but the course has really been set by Zach. I still believe that despite this tragedy, we'll still end up with a great movie. So, yeah, I mean, like, you know, I don't know, like, how much speculation we want to do just in terms of, like, the message that Joss Whedon is sending. And, like, at face value, I admire it because, I mean, like, what if none of that is true? And what if he's just doing a friend a favor? You know, like,
regardless. Yeah, but that's not the case. We know that's not the case because he's been announced for a separate project.
Yeah.
Like, if this was out of the blue, it'd be different. Yeah, I would have a much different reaction. But we know now that
but if he's directing a Batman movie, so what? Like, if he doesn't feel comfortable with Disney and Marvel Studios and he wants to go work elsewhere and he wants to make comic book movies, where's the next place he needs to go? You know, like,
I'm not saying that,
like,
he broke the law.
So, I mean, like, and plus, like, look, people complain about the DC extended universe, and it's like, well, look at this, like, rash of good filmmakers they've brought on board lately. And that's the direction that they obviously need to go in now that they've had James Wan and now that they've had Patty Jenkins, who seems to have possibly made a really good movie in Wonder Woman. They've got Matt Reeves on board, and now they've got Joss Whedon on board. So their roster is just vastly improving pretty much from top to bottom, and I don't know, like, it doesn't really matter to me as long as they're getting good movies. And if Warner Brothers and DC are willing to give, and we've talked about this before, are willing to give filmmakers more freedom and more room to play and to let their specific and personal creative voice give them more room to sort of exercise that, I'm totally fine with that. I don't care. Like, I want Joss Whedon to have free reign, because when he infused his voice into the Avengers, he changed comic book movies forever. I'm sorry, like, he made one of the greatest of all time, the biggest of all time at that point, and he changed how they would be made from now on. I mean, he was an insane cultural influence in terms of what DC wanted to do. So the fact that they can bring this guy on board who informed what they would do moving forward, and if they can give him the same freedom, then I think that's a positive step. And I don't really care what message that sends to Marvel. Maybe it's the message that, look, if you want a guy like Joss Whedon to give you what he gave you with those two Avengers movies, especially the first one, I want to point out, then you got to give him more freedom than you're giving him. And if DC's going to do that, then good.
And look, the second one is great too. So, but yeah, I don't know. Like, I feel like there's still something that bugs me here, just because when he came aboard the Avengers, it was like, wow, here's the tone and the style of the Marvel movies had been established at that point. And it was trending in the direction that would fit perfectly with Joss Whedon's voice as a filmmaker. And yes, he totally elevated and coagulated it and took it to another level, to the place that it needed to be. And it was definitely missing something before Joss Whedon came along. However, it was trending in that direction. And there was just, it was just like this nice, you know, it was just this nice complimentary thing going on between the two sides. But here, it feels like another situation of DC getting the cart before the horse, not knowing not knowing exactly what they want to do, you know. So they back into this extended universe with Man of Steel. They realize, okay, well, that's successful enough to do this. So let's go ahead and bring Batman in and you know, not do a standalone movie and hurry up and get to the Justice League. And then, oh, that's not working. Let's try the Suicide Squad thing. Oh, that's not working. Let's, you know, oh, our, here's our problem. Our problem is that we're not funny enough. So we'll punch that up. And, well, who's the best guy to do it? Well, we'll just bring in Joss Whedon. And that feels like a steroid shot, a artificial way to build this ongoing series of movies. And yes, at the end of the day, we're going to get better DC movies. But I don't know if they're actually addressing the root issue that they've had with their movies, which is that they did not have a core direction. And I feel like this doesn't necessarily give them a direction. It gives a nice polish to what they're doing. And yes, I mean, up to this point, they've lacked a world-building kind of auteur like a Joss Whedon or a Matt Reeves to guide their universe the way that they've let several different filmmakers guide the Marvel universe over there. But I just feel like so that's a good thing that you know, they have him now, but still, it feels like a steroid shot. It does not feel like an organic direction. And I don't know what the solution is. I think that, you know, if you have the option to get Joss Whedon, get Joss Whedon. That's not the bad decision. It's just, I'm not sure. It just still feels like DC is just making it. You know what I'm saying?
And well, not, look, if he's a free agent,
yeah,
you get him. You know,
you get like, him.
You,
I agree.
You get him.
Totally agree.
You know, like,
but
so
you see my
I don't
point?
Know.
Though?
I'm, you see my I'm point? Disagree that, like, with you there. Because, like,
okay.
I don't think... Go ahead.
So my point is that from the ground up, so when Marvel started, they built that house, you know, with a firm foundation and with a direction that they knew they were going to go in, and then everything else bent to that. With DC, it feels like they started with the roof, and then they went to the walls, and then, oops, we got to find the foundation, so let's put in the foundation. Does that make sense?
Sort of. I think starting with Man of Steel was an admirable effort in terms of building that universe. I think that's a perfect place to start. And yeah, I think that they might have they obviously rushed into it a little too quick in terms of making their quote unquote Man of Steel sequel of the Batman versus Superman movie. And oh wait, never mind, it's not a sequel anymore. We're doing this. We're just going gung ho full bore here. So, yeah, like, I agree with you to an extent, but just, like, specifically on the Joss Whedon point, again, like, if he's out there and he's available and he wants to come work for you, book him, you know, hire him, add him to your roster, and maybe, and like, even no matter where you start, because, I mean, like, if that's the reason he's coming in, okay, he came in, he's doing that job, okay, maybe we can start from square one now. What does he want to
yeah.
do? He wants to write and direct and produce a Batgirl movie. Okay, great. Let him do that. And maybe having Whedon just on board, making a movie the way he wants to do it, bringing what he learned from his experience with Marvel, I think that those are all positive things. And maybe that gives DC an edge that it obviously didn't have before. And plus, I mean, look, Joss Whedon has obviously, he's not coming into this green. You know, like he clearly left Marvel for very specific reasons and was burned by an experience. And I don't think that he's necessarily going to go into this super naive in terms of which job he's taking and how he wants to be involved in like a mega giant superhero company and franchise. I think he has experience and he's seasoned at this point, and he's going to do it his way. And I think that he's going to come with his terms, and DC and Warner Brothers are going to have to meet him, you know, in the middle on that. So
that's what I'm saying, is that they've got, for better or worse, this established thing that they're doing, and now they bring in this guy that, I mean, his work does not gel as cohesively with their tone and their house style as it did with Marvel. I mean, that's, I think,
well, maybe
that's
they're changing that style. Maybe they're
well, that's
maybe
what I'm
they're
saying.
Willing
that
change.
That's wacky. That's crazy.
That's good.
That
And I guess it's good.
So
I guess
are you
good,
saying?
But
so
then,
you're saying that?
No, is it good? Is it good for
Europe? No, listen. If you're saying if something is bad right now in your eyes and in the eyes of a lot of people, that they should just stay that course. Like, no matter what, they should just keep doing things the way that they're doing just because that's how they started doing it? Or should they recognize maybe where what they did wrong and the fact that their roster isn't what maybe it could be? And should they change that course? Should they pivot? And should they make better decisions in hiring people like Joss Whedon and Matt Reeves? This, to me, looks like they're like self-improvement, self-starting, as opposed to what they were doing from the start. In terms of handing the keys to people who, A, have a lot of experience doing enormous productions like this and multi-character, big, super shared universe superhero movies, and also people who are just good filmmakers. Like, that's
progress. No. So here's my thing, is that what Joss Whedon does is Marvel. And so...
Not anymore.
The answer is not to be for DC to be more like Marvel. That's the problem. That's been the problem. Is all they've ever done is measure themselves up to Marvel. They're the little brother that can't find his own identity.
J.J. Abrams does Star Trek, so we shouldn't hire him for Star Wars.
Well, yeah.
Oh, wait, no, that worked out, didn't it?
Yeah, except that he made Star Trek like Star Wars to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So he was already maybe, you know, cast in the wrong place to begin with. So what I'm saying is that Joss Whedon helped to cohere the Marvel House style. And DC's problem was not that it needed to be more like the Marvel House style. They had a fine house style. Look, if they brought in Matt Reeves, and he was the one overseeing all this, I mean, I see a much more linear connection between the tone of something like Cloverfield or Dawn of the Planet of the Apes than the DC movies than I do the DC movies and the Avengers or Firefly. You know, it's just there's a DC was trying to go for a texture and a mythology that Marvel wasn't, and that was admirable. It's just what they were doing wasn't good. It wasn't because of what they were going for. It was because how they were going for it. You know, of this very moody, very dark, very oppressive atmosphere. You can be a little bit more serious and high stakes without those things. The solution isn't to I hate doing this, but it's like WCW bringing in Hulk Hogan. You know, and all of a sudden, WCW stopped being its unique brand of fake fighting, and it started becoming a diet version of WWF. And that's what I'm afraid DC is doing, is saying, well, we couldn't do our own thing, so I guess we'll just be, you know, diet Marvel. And that's the potential there, and that's what I'm afraid of. And so... That's where I'm at.
I don't know.
I would feel much better if they had stayed the course. Well, here's the two approaches that I would have felt more comfortable with. One is stay the course and, you know, let these new filmmakers, Jenkins and James Wan and Matt Reeves, work in this established thing and slowly make the movies better, slowly cohere them a little bit better, and stay the course. But then, obviously, like we just talked about, if Joss Whedon comes knocking on the door, you don't send him home. But I think when he shows up, I think you slam on the brakes. And wherever you're at in Justice League, if you're still shooting, you stop shooting. And you have it all in hands, and you figure out, hey, we have the heavy hitter at Marvel. So how are we're going to change. Somehow we're going to change. So how are we going to do this?
Zack Snyder is their heavy hitter, and he was almost finished making a Justice League movie, and because he has to back out, and you know
if assuming that Whedon knocked on the door in November of last year, not now. I'm saying right now there's nothing else they can really do, and
if you're DC, you're saying stop, and ultimately, like. I don't know if you mean like recalibrate or even like fire Zack Snyder so we can
no, no, no,
step
no,
in.
Saying,
like what exactly
saying,
are you saying here? Because
I'm saying, look, in my fake narrative that I'm building here, Joss Whedon has been on board since after Suicide Squad. So let's
right.
say November, fall 2016, Joss Whedon comes knocking and says, hey, I'm burned by Marvel. You guys need help. Do you want my help? I'm saying you go over to Zack Snyder and say, hey, man, good news. We've got Joss Whedon. I think something we struggled with is our script. Now we've got one of the best blockbuster scriptwriters in town wanting to help us. So we're going to stop everything you're doing on Justice League, and you're going to get your movie, and you're going to get to direct it. However, we're going to figure out these script issues that have plagued us for the last four movies. That's what I'm saying. And Joss Whedon is going to be a part of that. And Joss Whedon is going to help us dial in this universe that we've been struggling to start. And I think that as a filmmaker, Zack Snyder would respond to that extremely positively. Because he's not a script writer. You know, I think that he would admit that. I don't think that there would be a power struggle. I think it would be, hey, we've got this big heavy hitter, so let's figure that out. But I could be wrong. That this could all be a total, you know, fabrication on my point. And if it's the opposite, which it seems, by all reports, it seems to be that the opposite is that, you know, slowly but surely, Joss Whedon has been becoming more and more cozy over there, then what they're doing now is kind of their only course of action. But because you can't stop production on Aquaman, I don't guess, but maybe you do. I don't know. That movie can only get better. So, I don't know. I'm just saying, I think you see what I'm saying, is that their solution, and I'm not saying this is their automatic solution. I just hope that their solution is not just to be Diet Marvel, but to be their own thing, and then Joss Whedon happens to be this one of the story guys behind that.
Yeah, you know, I do see what you're saying, and you're right. I mean, like, it starts with these scripts, and for whatever reason, they think Chris Terrio is for, like, the guy won an Oscar for Argo. I get it, Ben Affleck. He's Ben Affleck's boy, I guess, but. Didn't really work out with Batman versus Superman. And, you know, based on what we've seen so far, I don't know about Justice League. And from the sounds, like from what it sounds like, the whole script process for this Batman standalone movie has been a disaster, you know? So I don't really know. And you're right. Like, hopefully Joss Whedon's influence perhaps starts at the script level and concept level, and then they move forward. But, you know, I know that you're not crazy about Zack Snyder as a director, so it's like no matter what script he gets his hands on, would you rather Zack Snyder direct that, or would you rather, you know, one of these new guys step on board, including Whedon? And what excites me as just a film fan about more so about DC than it does Marvel is I think that they're getting better filmmakers on board, and they're padding their roster with better singular filmmakers than what Marvel has right now. And I am excited about the opportunity that they have with people like Reeves and Wan and now Whedon. Whereas, you know, we know at this point that Marvel isn't really a director's paradise. Although, you know, you don't hear the Russos complaining a whole lot, but maybe that's because, you know, they're happy with the opportunity that they have and the role that Marvel has given them. And look, James Gunn is another guy who's a real ringer in this whole thing, and that by all accounts, Guardians of the Galaxy is his vision, and it's made how he wants to make it. And maybe he's unique within that framework, but I don't know. Like, I trust Joss Whedon, you know, especially after Avengers 1. And I love Age of Ultron, but obviously something went wrong there. Something rubbed him the wrong way where he felt like he didn't have the control that he wanted or that he was used to. And so he decided to jump ship and move on. And again, like, that makes him arguably the most sought after or exciting free agent in the business. And so good on DC for snatching him up. And again, I don't think he goes into this green. And I think he's going to know what he wants, and he's going to write and direct on his own terms. And I'm excited about that prospect. You know, I don't know if like an angry Joss Whedon comic book movie is the best possible outcome, and I'm not sure what that would be. But again, I mean, like, I hate to keep coming back to this point, but if Joss Whedon's on my team, then I've got a significant advantage, or at least I've got an advantage that I didn't have before. And so he I don't know if he's going to be in a leadership role or anything in terms of moving this shared universe forward, but I would hope that he is based on his experience and just based on the roster that they continue to build. DC is moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, from what I understand, Geoff Johns is kind of the last year or so has been the creative, you know, every tying everything together, pushing everything forward. He's a comic book writer and producer. But I don't know. My concern is that since the beginning of DC trying to do this thing, somebody keeps coming along with a bag of magic beans, and they keep saying, this guy has the magic beans, whether it was Zack Snyder or David Ayer or Ben Affleck. They keep holding these people up and saying, ooh, we've got this guy. This guy's going to fix it. And then it doesn't quite work out. And I feel like that, yeah, so far Joss Whedon is the most promising guy holding the magic bag beans so far. But I still think that that mentality is a problem. You know, if you're constantly looking for somebody to help you out rather than, you know, having the foundation going forward and then bringing in people that fit that foundation, and my metaphors are all over the place, but I feel like that's a core problem that you can't outrun. You can't, you know, out sizzle with whatever star that you bring in if it's a core issue with how you're building your stories. But yes, all that said, look, they've got James Wan, who is, I just rewatched Furious 7. He's one of the best action directors alive right now. The buzz about Wonder Woman is extremely positive, and Patty Jenkins looks to be doing great work. Matt Reeves is Matt Reeves. Joss Whedon is Joss Whedon. And look, I mean, I've never seen Zack Snyder direct a Joss Whedon script. There's nothing that would lead me to believe that wouldn't be an awesome movie. So, I think it all comes down to what we're talking about is if they've got the talent, you know, and it's just if they can cohere it all in a narrative fashion and find some direction and really stick with it and really make it good, we're going to have a lot of really awesome movies coming up, and that's exciting.
Yeah, you know, it's just, you look at the credits on the upcoming DC movies, and there are still concerns because, I mean, you look at Aquaman, and you're right. James Wan, I think he's really good when he's really good. You know, I'm not a huge fan of The Conjuring, not a huge fan of the Insidious movies, but I know that those movies, for the most part, are pretty beloved by most people. But then you look at the screenwriter, and, you know, Will Beale, if that's how you pronounce it, he might have hit a home run with the Aquaman script. His only credit prior to that is Gangster Squad. You know? So, yeah. And so, yeah, like, you wonder, right? But, I mean, you look at Patty Jenkins, Wonder Woman looks awesome. And I, you know, I don't want to get into what the buzz is so far, but Patty Jenkins had directed one movie, and that was Monster. And when you saw Monster, you didn't think, oh, yeah, she should direct Wonder Woman. You know, like,
yeah,
the scale looks exactly the same, right? I don't know. And who wrote that? This guy named Alan Heinberg. And is he a, like, primarily a comic book writer? Or is this a guy who's, I don't see any movies to his credit. Like,
unless he's very new, I've never heard him as a comic. I've never heard of him as a comic book writer.
Okay, so he's, I'm seeing now his TV credits. Like, he's written a lot of TV shows, like Party of Five and Sex and the City and Gilmore Girls and Scandal and Grey's Anatomy. And this is the guy who's writing Wonder Woman, you know? So
that's kind of awesome. Great. I don't know. That's,
yeah, maybe.
Common denominator
right
there is pretty great.
Yeah, it is for sure. And look, maybe he's the right guy for this. And maybe he and Jenkins are going to be a force to be reckoned with in the future. So there's a lot of risk here, too, you know, like in terms
yeah
of giving people with limited credits opportunities like this. But look, Joss Whedon, when he was at Marvel, was Serenity his only feature film directing credit at that point?
Yep. And they hand him the Avengers. Like, I kind of remember back when that, like, when that was announced, or thinking, like, wait a second. Like, when they announced Joss Whedon was directing the Avengers, the movie that would tie all of this together, thinking, like, wait, what? You know, like, that seems like a risk. In retrospect, it's like one of the best decisions they ever made. So, you know, this industry is full of risk taking, and it's refreshing to an extent, obviously, when it works out. But obviously, when big studios like Disney and Warner Brothers take these kinds of chances when they could micromanage it at every single level and get who they want as director, who will execute their ideas in what was said during those focus groups, instead of just saying, hey, look, you're a great director, we believe in you, do this. You know, we believe in you, get the job done. And I think that's what we're seeing to an extent from DC. I mean, obviously they hire a guy like David Ayer, and who has a very specific, unique voice that, you know, based on harsh times and what Street Kings or whatever movies he had made up to that point, you're thinking like, well, maybe this isn't right for comic book movies. But what I saw in the trailers was, wait, this actually looks kind of neat. It looks like a David Ayer movie to an extent. It just looks totally different than what we've seen to this point. Then we see the movie, and then we learn like all about reshoots, and we learn about like micromanaging and like how it got lost during the editing and blah, blah, blah. So it doesn't always work out, even when you bring in somebody who has had a very specific voice and is that kind of auteur. Things can get messy no matter who you hire. So if it seems like a risk, it turns into less of a risk, and it turns into studio meddling, and then people disagree and things don't work out. But I guess that's just, you know, that could be applied to basically any movie at any level based on who's paying for it, who's involved creatively. At this level, it's super tricky because it's huge, and I can see from the perspective of people handling the money and wanting to make an enormous profit off of this, a global profit. You know, depending on one guy or one woman in terms of how they see it and what story they want to tell and how your future and your profitability can hang in the balance of that, that's scary, you know. But to an extent, I mean, I admire them hiring people like Patty Jenkins and Matt Reeves and even David Ayer, you know. I mean, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But I'd rather see, as a movie fan, I would rather see an interesting director make an interesting movie, or at least try to do that, instead of just like a corporate like conglomeration of a movie.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you're kind of stating the Marvel case for itself, in that, you know, they won't rely on just a personality to build their, because you're not making a movie. That's the thing. That's the thing that DC, the tension there is that Marvel isn't saying it wants to make just one great movie. It's saying it wants to make this bigger world. And so they are the master there is the character, you know, is the central character arc for each of their characters. And that's what is king there, and not egos, not people, not personalities. Whereas DC is doing something admirable and saying, look, we want actual, you know, we want filmmakers to feel like they have a stake, but then they water that down with, well, but we also want to build this universe. So it's a can't have both. You know, they're trying to have both, and I think that's.
Well, what about
James Gunn? Yeah, but I mean, James Gunn got the ball and still had to play in his lane before he, you know, was trusted with total autonomy. I mean, he had to work with Thanos into that first Guardians movie. So he had to kiss the ring of, you know, greater universe uniformity.
Yeah, but see, like, the reason I really like Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is that he obviously has as much autonomy as anybody has had in the MCU so far, and that movie barely distracts itself with the shared universe.
Because he earned
like,
it.
Agenda,
he earned it.
You know? Like that's yeah, he earned it, but Jon Favreau had earned it, you know, and like with the first Iron Man movie and their other filmmakers, like the Russos have made good movies, right?
But the problem is that Guardians, I mean, he earned it to the point that nobody had messed with those characters, and he took them to a place that they hadn't expected them to go, whereas and they don't really have like immediate plans for those characters, whereas Iron Man or the Avengers, like, they had somewhere they needed to go with those characters, and as soon as that butted heads with what the director wanted, they had to make a choice.
Yeah, but, I mean, when the Guardians of the Galaxy is the biggest domestic grosser of what, 2014 or whenever it came out, they have immediate plans with those characters at that point, and they're going to become a part of
their immediate plans were to let James Gunn do whatever the hell he wants.
Well, but, see, that's where it's complicated because, I mean, they're going to have to figure into the larger discussion. They're going to have to be in an Avengers movie, you know? And so that's what surprises me a little, the fact that Gunn still got free reign or got it perhaps even more on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Like, think about the post-credit sequences or little nuggets in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Not to get into too spoilery territory here, none of those build upon the MCU. Right? Like, it's all just, like, callback jokes in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Like,
one of them,
those characters.
One of them 100% definitely does in a huge
Which
way.
One?
But, man, I don't want to spoil it, but it's the last one, and it's about a, I don't know, I don't want to say. Spoilers for Guardians of the Galaxy 2 in 5 seconds, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They set up Adam Warlock at the end.
Right.
And he is a massive character in the Infinity Gem saga.
Yeah.
So that's big. Anyway, but
those scenes
he set the tone
good.
Of the Marvel cosmic thing. I mean, you see how Thor Ragnarok is influenced by James Gunn just by looking at the first trailer. So yeah, I think that he did his job, stayed in his lane, and his movie made a ton of money, so now he gets.
So is
a
he
lot
an anomaly,
of...
or should
yes, he's
should
an anomaly.
That inform should that inform Marvel to say, hey, look at James Gunn. Maybe he's like Joss Whedon. Obviously, was that type of guy.
If they bring in Scott Derrickson for Doctor Strange, and promise him, look, if this movie makes a lot of money, you can do whatever you want in Doctor Strange 2. Then they're setting themselves up to have an argument when they've got Doctor Strange doing something different in Avengers 9 or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So they can make those promises. But the fact that they probably didn't have any, they didn't know what they were going to do with the Guardians of the Galaxy after that first movie. That was a total gamble. That was, if that movie is a flop, then those characters are dead and we don't even go back to them. You know? And that they don't have that luxury with Iron Man or Doctor Strange or any of those other. And DC doesn't have that luxury with Batman or Superman or Wonder Woman. They need each of these characters to survive, so it's hard for them to gamble on these auteur filmmakers.
I don't know. I mean, I would consider Jon Favreau an auteur filmmaker.
Right, and they couldn't gamble with Iron Man 2 of letting him do whatever he wanted because they had this greater plan of setting up S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, Iron
so
Man
why
was
you
a gamble. Robert Downey Jr. was a gamble. You know, like, those were all big gambles that really paid off. And so once they paid off, that meant, okay, well, we can start here and we can start to build this cinematic universe with this character who isn't even, like, the figurehead of the Marvel Universe anyway, but now he's become the face that runs the place, to go back to that analogy. But so I'm just saying, like, it's always dangerous because they are going, like, these successes are going to inform how the Marvel Corporation moves forward. That's why I'm a little worried about Guardians of the Galaxy now, because, I mean, you could make an argument that Guardians of the Galaxy are as popular as the Avengers at this point, based on how this movie is performing. And so what does that mean for Guardians moving forward? Does Guardians 3 resemble those first two movies, or does it feel more like Civil War? You know, I guess it all goes back to James Gunn. I mean, James Gunn's making these movies, not the Russos or not anybody else who's made an Avengers movie or a standalone with those characters so far. So, again, that's what separates Guardians from the rest of this stuff, is James Gunn.
Well, eventually,
he directs.
Eventually, those will converge, you know? Eventually, we will either have the Russos, Captain America in Guardians, in a James Gunn Guardians movie, or the James Gunn Guardians in a Russos Captain America movie. So eventually those two styles and approaches will converge, and that's, to me, that's exciting. That's not a nervous thing. And I feel like, again, Marvel has, because at the end of the day, even James Gunn bows to that greater purpose of serving the larger universe. he wouldn't be there, and he wouldn't have gotten that freedom if he wasn't willing to play that game again, you know? So
yeah,
I think him and the Russos are going to play ball just fine.
I think he just does it with a little more personality than what the Russos have given us so far, and I think that they've made good movies, but I think that it's pretty clear like those movies are meant that they're products that toe the company line. And that doesn't mean that Guardians of the Galaxy doesn't do that. You're right. James Gunn plays nice, and to an extent, he does his part in helping to set up the MCU. I would say far less so than those movies do, even though the Guardians are going to be a larger part of that shared universe, especially as these movies continue to do as well as they're doing. I like seeing a Marvel movie that has as much personality as these Guardians movies do and are clearly the work of an auteur as they are. I prefer that so far. Like that's just me. And while I like those other Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, I get a bigger kick out of the ones that clearly show the hands of their directors. Now, I don't necessarily think that we get that we've gotten that necessarily from the Russos, and that's not to take away from the job that they've done, because they're obviously good action directors and they're good filmmakers for sure. I just the movies are I think just by comparison they're a little duller than this. I mean, would you agree? Like, do you prefer James Gunn, the work he's done in the MCU, or do you prefer the Russos and what they've done so far?
God, we have gone so far off track, and we need to wrap up very soon. But no, I think that the style that the Russos brought to Captain America: Winter Soldier was markedly different than anything we saw in the Avengers or Iron Man 3, and I think that is a better movie than both Guardians movies. Stylistically, do I like the crazy colors of Guardians? Does it work for that magnificently? Yes, absolutely.
Colors? But, so that's it?
Huh?
So it just comes down to pretty colors? That's the only credit you're
no,
giving?
No, I'm just saying that that's something that's unique to that. That, yes, it pops differently than the Captain America, the last two Captain America movies. But that's not to say that the last two Captain America movies have no directorial voice or something like that. I think especially Winter Soldier does. And it does not look like the Marvel movies that came before it. Civil War, yes, that is closer to the Marvel House style, but I don't know what you're trying to get out of me here, but
I want to talk
yeah.
about color grading. That's what.
Okay, apparently you do. Go ahead.
No, it's all right. We don't have enough time.
We don't. Okay, but
look, this all comes back to the Miz's work shoot about the WWE style of wrestling.
Uh-huh.
And how
it does.
Parallels the MCU house style that you're talking about here.
Oh,
you're
my God. Okay. So,
you're talking about either the Guardians Daniel Bryan style or you're talking
right.
about the Miz
here
Russo
we go.
Style. Okay?
Well, what we can agree on, this is ending right now, what we can agree on is that things are we're excited for DC. And I think also this is a moment where we see the people making movies there really pulling together and supporting one of their guys. And that's awesome. And that's something that as a person that's been critical of the DC approach, that's encouraging to me to see that that has become a bit of a filmmaking family at Warner Brothers, and to see them all rallying around Zack Snyder and helping him see him through this process is encouraging. It's wonderful, and yeah, I'm looking forward to the next steps in the DC movies.
All right, this was about DC, wasn't it? Thoughts and prayers out to Zack Snyder's family.
For Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.